been fun. So it's interesting to have two new people at the last night. I always like that. Sometimes, and during Discovering Buddhism, it's a two-year course with 14 modules, and each module is like 6-8 weeks, and they're all different, karma and death and dying and practice and all this kind of stuff. And then the last one is emptiness, which is like, wow, you know, blowing your mind with all these ideas. And sometimes I've seen people come in on the last night, the last class of a two-year series, and you're like, come on in. Just see what, take in what you can. If you don't get it, start over again when it starts over. But we call that just having the karma for arriving then, you know. It's hard to make all these parts work. There we go. I think they're more than halfway through. That's my guess. I never really know where they are until I hear. Which one are they on? Karma. Are you in karma now? But that's not, I'm trying to think what module that fits into. Yeah. They're only on number 4? I bet they're a little further than that. I think they're on like 8. So, yeah. Sometimes that fits into karma, but I'm not sure where they are. Like, it all fits into similar places to get rolling. So, two newbies. Let's make sure our cell phones are on mute. Everybody check that. Or meditate, as we call them. Yeah, everything's set up. I got it this time. Thank you, Jackie. So we usually go over the 7-point posture to make sure that everybody's familiar with it. Do you want to try the ground at all, Joy, for this or no? I can't. Me? Yeah. Okay. So the base, Layla's sitting in like she's got her legs in a good posture. The base are the legs, and that's like building a building, so you want to have a nice firm platform. You do want to uncross your legs so that you don't cut the circulation off. So can you see, like, you take this foot and just put it on top of that one? Does that work? Yeah. And then you can pull them out a little bit more if it gets too tight. And one thing that I found that helps a lot of people, like, amazingly, is to put that cushion under the knee that's suspended a little higher. Yours are already down, so it's good. But if this knee, like my knee, is up higher than this one, so at home I put something under that one, and it totally helps the hips. So for people who do try to sit and have hip pain, I have discovered that helps immensely. And another thing that works well are the cushions that go in a V like that. I'm trying that out at home now too. And then your hips are higher, and the whole thigh is supported. And then so in that way you get a lot of good support for the legs. Because you can sit comfortably for a few minutes, but once you reach like 30 minutes to an hour, parts start to go to sleep. Okay, your hands can be placed either on top of your knees like that, and that makes it comfortable in the shoulders. This actually helps if your shoulders tend to turn in. It's a little bit harder to do that when you're sitting on the chair, but not too, you know, it's wider here. On the chair, it's more narrow. And in this tradition, we actually place the right hand on top of the left and place the thumbs together real lightly and then just settle that into your lap. There. And that's a way to bring wisdom and compassion together. So that's, and you imagine you're holding a jewel, a precious jewel in your hand. And then with the arms, you want to try to create a little space in here because it's easy. That's why these postures make it kind of hot right here, only for heat purposes, nothing woohoo. So this closes off the gap and makes it a little warm, and you can kind of sweat if you were in India. So they do a posture like this, and they create space in here. Mm-hmm. On the top. Mm-hmm. All right, and then the spine is nice and straight like a stack of coins. So if you imagine you were placing coins up, you can do different things like imagining you're zipping up a wetsuit, kind of pulling the pelvis forward. And once you get that tilt, then the spine is stacked nice and straight and the air flows really free. If you bend right here, we talk a lot about crimp. I call it crimping the straw. And it cuts off the air. It cuts off the energy. And it can actually create some slight depression, too. If you start to get a little down, then your posture tends to follow, and then it tends to follow, and then it tends to follow, and it makes everything worse. So if you even try to sit straight just to breathe deep, it can alleviate some anxiety and some pressure that's building up with the way you're thinking about things. So just simple breathing can really help. And you guys, have you ever been in therapy? We asked this in the first class, but only two people original to the first class. Do you remember, does anybody know what a therapist asks if you get really upset in a therapy session, what they say to notice? Normally, everybody stops breathing when they get upset. Well, I mean, not stops completely, but really makes it shallow, like hardly breathing at all. So we start breathing from almost up here. We get real upset. Hey, guys, come on in. More newbies. Come on up front because it's the last class and there's just a few of us here. Welcome. Yeah, you can. Hey, Jasmine. Hey, Quinny. Do you want to sit on the floor or on a chair? Okay, you can just join. Son John. Yeah. Yeah. Good. So we were just simply going over posture of sitting, so we haven't missed much yet. Are you guys comfortable on the ground? Good. Okay. So then we were saying the spine, when you roll, let's see, was that where we were? No, crimping the straw breath. So when you bend in here, you create that, the diaphragm can't even move freely. So that's another reason why it's real important. And so there's breath, but there's also just energy flow, which we can't grab a hold of. But the energy flow gets stifled when you cave in. So that's why we want to have the back nice and straight. And if you're leaning against a chair, when we're talking, it's fine to lean back. But once we meditate, you want to pull forward a little bit and have your back free from leaning so that it's real straight. And then the head. So the head is, imagine that, you know, this is this last indention right here in the, where the skull meets the spine is called the occiput. And the head or the skull is sitting, let's put it like that, on the vertebrae. And so if you've ever seen a bobblehead in a car, you know, the little doggies in the window that go like that. So you imagine your head being nice and loose. You don't have to look groovy, but it wants to float instead of feeling like it's stuck. Mm-hmm. So creating a little space in there. And then you gently roll your chin. You don't tuck it in, but you let it drop a little. And you can see, the Buddha has his head a little tilted like that? So that you don't want to be like that. And not just straight, but a little bit down. And there's nothing too magic about that either. It's simply to keep the cervical collar not crimped, you know, in a comfortable position. Because we're trying to create practices that will endure. So you want to learn the recipe to make it right. And then the mouth. So the mouth, you place your tongue on the palate, the top palate, behind the front row of teeth, and just place it right there. Apparently that helps you not drool. So I haven't experienced that quite yet. I haven't done a five-hour meditation yet, so. Where? On the top of your mouth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of naturally where it would be anyway, but the tongue will rest behind the front row of teeth. So your tongue is just up. And it's supposed to keep your thirst quenched, too, and not to make you not get so thirsty. That's what the Tibetans say. So, you know, they're meditating for long periods of time. We probably won't counter these things in our little minuscule meditations. And the eyes, interestingly enough, you can, if you've never meditated, you have the opportunity to try both ways. Or if you've only meditated a little bit, you can try open and closed. So I've done it for a while, so I've always closed my eyes, so it's just really odd for me to open them. But if you do tend to get sleepy, you want to open your eyes a touch and let some light in, but you have your gaze at an angle, like down at this angle, and you actually try not to see anything. So it's kind of funny because your mind wants to create stories about everything it sees. So if you get really distracted, then you would be a good candidate to have your eyes closed. But again, you can see the Buddha has his eyes gently open. So if it's good enough for him. Right in the middle? Yeah. That is actually just something that will go away in time. Because you have to get the belly strong and so get these muscles strong here and get the erector strong. I teach yoga too, so we have to get these muscles to hold up the back. But when we're on retreat, like we were just talking about, I do a lot of private yoga sessions, and the first thing people come to me is, my knees, oh, my knees hurt. there, you know, because we sit for a long time. Then you get hips, and then you get the middle of the back. So it's mine will start to hurt when I meditate a lot, too. And it all is just the knee bones connected to the, you know, it's everything, the way we flow together. But you can, you know, you can kind of move and stretch when you're in the posture and do a little bit of that and then settle your body back down. You never want to take it too tight. But you wouldn't want to sit like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It feels kind of good for a minute. Right. So then you've crimped that straw again. So then you roll back up. And you can also keep your eyes closed and, you know, stretch your leg a little bit if it starts to go to sleep. And you can learn to do those kind of things and be relaxed. When someone's teaching for a long period of time, I'll kind of do this and sit there for a while. And then I'll just sort of tuck it back here like that and move around. It does settle. I've noticed I can finally actually tell you from proof instead of just from thinking it or hearing about it. But the word settle, does that make sense to you, that the body begins to settle down? That it will stop screaming after a while. And it will just become, and I felt it at one the last retreat, like I was just okay sitting. I didn't feel the need to get up. I didn't feel like, OMG, you know, I'm going to scream. Because it kind of starts to get angry after a while if it's uncomfortable and it wants to move around. But there's a point then after you do it enough that it just, it's content to just kind of hang out. And so I tell all my yoga students that all the postures you do in yoga, everything we do, so if we work for 90 minutes or 80 before our meditation, all of that is really just so that you can keep your trap shut, sit down and meditate and be comfortable. You know what I mean? It's all about the meditation is the jewel of it. So in America, a lot of people tend to think about the body mostly, so they think yoga is all about the body. While that's true, and while it does, of course, help the body, it's really, its goal is to really have the body just stay out of it so that you can meditate and be more comfortable. So I think that's a good reference point. Any questions about the body? So one thing we were talking with John and Layla's doing naturally is you can have them out front. This is like how Tara sits, with the right leg out, left leg in. Or you can take it, like John has, and stack it on top where this bone will fit nicely into the bone underneath. So see what that feels like.
Yeah, that's good.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, good?
How's that feel? It's harder with jeans on when they're tighter. Now, if they crisscross and you're sitting on one, it will tend to put it to sleep. So that's why it's crisscrossing isn't the best over a longer period of time. So when you do the, you know, Indian style, like we always set like that, crisscross applesauce, then this foot will probably tend to go to sleep. And you can switch the stack, too. And then, as I told John, you can, the knee that's higher, so now this one's higher, you can take another pillow and shove it underneath there, and it will totally help the hip if you ever have any hip pain. Be very supportive. And see, your foot, everybody's body is so different. Your foot's kind of curling up, so that could cause a little discomfort there. Mm-hmm. And you might like the way you started out with one in front of the other, which is like a Sukhasana position. So, does that help? Okay. Do you have any questions about sitting? Okay. All right. Let's move through. Oh, yeah. I didn't get to tell you guys. You can go back and forth. So when we get ready to do a meditation, which we'll do in a minute, you can come here. And if you get uncomfortable, you can go back to the chair. Thank you, Jim. So we're going to, since now there's more new people than older people, we'll let them choose whichever, I'll help them with something, but you guys choose whichever method you want to get yourself into the meditation, you know, whichever stabilizing factor you want to use, because you're used to that. And we'll do the body of light meditation to start out. This one's not too long. So get into whatever position you'll sit for a few minutes, and then you can move when you're done. And then prepare yourself. So if you want to have your eyes open or closed, focus your attention on your breath. So for you guys who haven't meditated much, just begin by simply counting the breath. And you count on the inhalation, breathing nice and natural. Oh, inhaling and exhaling through the nose. All through the nose. So just breathe in and counting one, and exhale, counting two. And what you're trying to do is to simply allow the mind to focus on the breath and nothing else, which is difficult when the train goes by, with me talking, with the sounds in the room. But all we're doing to lead us to be more happy is to have control over the mind, to be able to have it go where we want it to go. So we always start with a simple stabilizing factor, which is counting or different methods the other students have learned. And naturally, our mind wanders. So when it wanders away and it has no clue where it is and forgets the number, then start over with no judgment. Just start over. If it wanders a little bit and you kind of can pull it right back, then just keep going. Just keep counting. And as your mind begins to feel a little more relaxed, create an altruistic motivation for this session. You can think that you're meditating not just for your own benefit, but you're taking this time right now to meditate and develop your mind to become a more wise and kind person, able to be of benefit to all beings. And now visualize in the space above your head a sphere of white light, pure, transparent, and formless, and somewhat smaller than the size of your head. Spend some time concentrating on the presence of the light. Don't worry if it doesn't appear sharply. Just feel that it's there. Contemplate that the sphere of light represents all universal goodness, love, and wisdom, the fulfillment of your own highest potential. And then visualize that it decreases in size until it is a small, bright sphere about 1 inch in diameter. This small ball of white, pure light descends through the top of your head to your heart center. From there, it begins to expand once more, slowly spreading to fill your entire body. As it does, all the solid parts of your body dissolve and become light. Your organs, your bones, your blood vessels, tissue and skin all become pure, formless, white light. Concentrate on the experience of your body as a body of light. Think that all problems, negativities, hindrances have completely vanished, and that you've reached a state of wholeness and perfection. Feel serene and joyful. And if any thought or distracting object should appear in your mind, let it also dissolve into white light. And finally, dedicate your positive energy and insights to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. How was that? That's a little short one. Isn't that nice? Feel good? Did you kind of feel it penetrate through? Sleepy. You know, sometimes we've noticed every meditation is so different. Have you noticed that when they're just, some of them feel really happy and some of them can get kind of dark and some can feel kind of nothing and some very insightful and some can just be so darn sleepy. You couldn't find it? Yeah? Do you like to visualize things in daydream? Can you picture, like if I said picture a big white horse? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's some people I've noticed in yoga when you ask them, you know, we say, imagine a waterfall, all these things back in the 80s. And there would always be somebody who would say, I don't so much do that. You know, like their mind really doesn't picture things. Mm-hmm. Mm. Bring it in. Can you bring it in? Oh. That's okay. But you want to be able to experience it in that way. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's something that will just change, you know, with time. Did you experience that do you have any awareness of when you were young? If that was difficult for you, or can you visualize the white light above your head? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No. Oh. Well, you just want to make it white again. One thing you could do with the colors is you can imagine you're bringing in white light and then you're exhaling black light so that you let the negativities go out and you can give them a color like the black and then you can bring in the white. It's just something to play with. It changes. It'll change as you age. And like she's saying, it's almost like giving someone if anybody's tuning in through the webcam, it's like I'm giving you a recipe and you're imagining you're making a cake almost. You know, you're just telling someone, try this, try this. It doesn't mean everybody's going to be completely successful or everyone, there's no way to measure success, right? I guess enlightenment would be the way to measure. I don't have any hopes for that happening today or tomorrow, so I have a lot of hopes for it in the future. But that is a perfectly okay to experience whatever's coming in. It's just that you're working with your mind. And then you're just trying to let it train to do something so you can kind of see if you can coax it in a little more. Yeah. Yeah. We do all, in calm abiding meditation, we do all kinds of things where we're working with images. And so for some people, that is so difficult that they're better off with the breath, like just simply on something tangible, because you can feel the breath and then you can feel it leave. You can feel it come in. Is that easier? Well, you just work with it and let it, you can feel the breath because it's here. And then, yeah, don't worry about that. You're just trying to get it. You're just attaching any sense you want to. Like, you could imagine the way the clothing feels. You could imagine the way the belly feels as it fills with air, or the chest, or the warmth, or, you know, anything that works. You're really just trying to kind of grab whatever works. And so, the one thing you can always feel is the breath coming in and the breath going out. So as we're living, that's one thing we will probably be able to do is feel breath. And if that's all you do for years, that's perfectly fine to stay on that. Because everybody mostly still uses the breath as a stabilizing portion of their beginning of their meditation. And as we're discussing today, you can stay with the breath as your whole meditation, just counting to learn to focus, or you can use it in the beginning, as we talked last week, move through to different parts of meditations and ending with, you know, the just going over something in your mind. But one, two. Inhale is one. And then you can play with it. As we've discussed, you can count to 10, and then you can go backwards. If that keeps your mind a little more focused, and then go forward. You can, if 10's easy, it's even hard for me to count to 10 without my mind wandering. I've done it for years. It's not that this is easy to do. So you go back to 4, you go back, or 5, you know, you go back. Some people use 3. Mind starts wandering at 3. Go back to 1, do 3, go back to 1. If you can, you just try to stretch it. So if you do well at 7, go to 10. If you do well at 10, go on up and go to 21. And then some days it's going to be much, much harder than others. And so you cut yourself some slack. If you're really overworked and tense or depressed, then just give yourself a small number so you feel like you've done well. You know, there's nothing we have to do there. Do you guys have anything about last week? Since nobody else to ask about last week's meditation, any questions about? Okay. So I was just going to... Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. They had a homework. The homework on the plate, as they would say, was to see if they could roll the toilet paper in a different way. Dad's being difficult. Than they're used to doing. So if your mind always wants to have the toilet paper go over and you want it to be that way, then you train your mind to do it another way so that you see that you can be loose about things and then you can learn. Whichever way you do it, if you don't care, great, that's what we're going for. But if you think, no, the toilet paper has to go over, then try to do it under. If you think it has to go under, try to do it over. Good, you don't care. That's the point. But for some people, they really have to have, I mean, you can pick something that might be your thing, like squeezing the toilet. If you squeeze the toothpaste in the middle and somebody else comes in and goes, for God's sake, woman, can you not squeeze it? You know, people have pesky things in their life. Is there anything that irritates you? You like pesky? What irritates you?
I like the person who I live with to be, clean. If they're cooking, if they're doing coffee, you know, just to be clean, wash.
See, and when I like the way we all say, that's all. So I was living with someone who would get something off the sink, water pour, and then pulled away, dripping everywhere, and then just go like that. And I would, and you know, it's like, dirty shoes, filthy shoes, because he worked outside, walks all over the water. When he was done with the kitchen, how could you possibly even make this much of a mess? It was a mess. And I could say all I want to, could you just be a little cleaner? But that's coming from my side. His mind isn't disturbed by the dirt. Now, we can discuss responsibilities when you live with somebody, but I'm the only one that's having a problem with it. So I either have to learn to live with it, clean it up with a joyful mind, which is not going to probably happen, or leave that person. The options are pretty clear. You either have to deal, because you can say, well, here's when we talked about, what's my favorite pet name that I want to use next time? I don't want another pet, but if I had another pet, do you remember? Really? I want to name my next pet Peeves. And I could say, have you met my pet, Peeves? I think that's funny. Did you think it's funny? It's good. Kind of play on Jeeves, you know, Wooster, but pet Peeves. So I used to be a pet Peeve kind of person. So if I was with you in a married situation and I might say something like, well, Layla, you just need to know that really bothers me when it's like that. I'd really prefer it to be like that. And we'll be fine. If you just put the stick back this way every time. And Layla's looking at me like, oh, God, that's a little neurotic. But I say, that kind of bothers me. Can you put it like that? So when I come in the room, can you please have it like that? Because it bothers me when it's like this. So if you will just do your part, we'll all be good. But that's just telling you what to do so that I'm happy. And the whole point of the exercise is that's not how happiness actually works. It's got to come from within me and not just telling John what to do all the time, which is really what I'd be happier doing. my ex-husband, I'm an organizer now, and he said, oh, you have the perfect career. You tell everybody what to do, and they pay you. Yeah. But I help them a lot. So by me letting go of the vocabulary, pet peeves, I took it out of my whole vocabulary. I was amazed at how much happier I was when I quit telling everybody what I needed to be happy, and I realized it had to come from me. Then I just, if I want it like this, I walk into the room and I put it like that. But I don't need you to do it anymore. I still have a lot of, you know, we all have things that irritate us. So did he succeed at the toilet paper?
He
didn't change it.
We changed it.
Oh, you changed it.
And we both left it.
So it's under now.
And
you're okay? It was hard in the beginning of the week. John, anything you'd like to say here? So you have to go home and change it now. But you see how funny that is? Layla's looking at you guys like, why would you possibly be bothered by that, right?
No,
you get it. Oh, how sweet is that?
So delicate, you know.
Oh, the truth comes out. I love when kids come. So working with your mind is it. You get in the car if you're irritated by the temperature. We're trying to lessen the irritation. Because sometimes, like for me, I've been through huge stuff, and I actually handled it quite well. Little irritations, you know, it's really difficult when things irritate you day to day. Have you noticed those little things? Because little irritations are what lead to bigger anger, because whatever we practice, I promise you, you will get better at. So if you play the piano every day, you could be good. If you yell every day, you could be good. Right, Mom? Right, daughter? Busted! But, you know, when I first started here, I never thought about the icky stuff. I never occurred to me that I was practicing the icky stuff. We seem to, tell me if you think this is true, but we seem to associate practice with the good stuff. Practice dribbling a basketball. Practice cooking. Practice loving. Practice being kind to your spouse. I never realized I was practicing being the best irritated person on the planet. I just didn't know that. So then I had to really own it all, and that just bit. One's like, oh, it's all my responsibility. And, yeah. You go to a what? Oh, gotcha. So you got irritated at repetition.
Yeah.
I'm just repeating for the...
Yeah. When I talk to my mom, it's the same way. She repeats the same as her.
Yep, it's just that's her thing.
You're not listening to my repetition. I'm listening to you.
Exactly. I'm not married to you. You're married to me. It's easy to be married to me. That's my line.
Mom, you didn't say that today.
Yeah.
Well, because I forget.
How old are you?
But you forget.
Yeah, well, duh. Going to remember, right? No, I don't remember my mom saying half the stuff she said, and I was great, but you know, like, you said what? It's just the nature. Your mom said it. But you have the karma of, like, you could call that the karma of not only hearing you listened, but other people don't have that same karma, and so that's your irritating thing. Yeah. So she's got to turn the toilet paper the other way. She has to learn to not be irritated with everybody else's level.
Yeah, but see, if I have to tell every day water.
Yeah, it's just that's just the nature of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what we all, that's what this is, really. I mean, that's what...
So, Mom, just because someone doesn't do something at the time you want them to do, does not mean that the defense is on top today.
Yeah.
It's not being defensive. It's just that
Okay, well, that's good. We'll pause here. But, yeah, anybody she's encountering, she's saying that's her thing. And she knows. I mean, I think she's saying, that's my thing. And, John, what's your thing?
I have a lot of things.
Looking at mother.
You know, something that just gets under your skin. He's looking at Jackie like, come on, you know what they are more than I do, probably. But she doesn't get to say.
They tell me a lot of obvious stuff. Make sure you have kids and stuff.
And you're 20, 19, okay. Yep, that's right where that should be, too. Mine's 13. Yeah. And you'll go, yeah, Mom, yeah, Mom. Yeah. Well, and that'll morph and change, too. And so your thing is you have to see the love in that. Yeah. And you have to just go, of course they do. And you know that. It isn't that you don't know that. And you have to see that there's actually no benefit to be irritated by that. It's hard not to. So do you know what I used to do for a living? I painted 10,000 images a year, 200 images a day, sitting in a chair over and over and over. Well, it had a line of cards, and I hand-painted them. So if you said, I have 100 wedding invitations to do, oh, my God, you know, oh, my God, I got to go home and do these invitations. I've got to write 100 envelopes. I'd go, just give them to me. I'm like, brrr. I don't mind anything with repetition. What are you going to do? It's the same thing. It's just the way her mind works. And she's decided, I like this, I don't like that. That's what we do all day long. I like this, I don't like that. I like him, I don't like her. I want this, I want that. I don't like this. I love chocolate. I don't like Brussels sprouts. If you think, even for a moment, let's say even for an hour, that you didn't have any judgment, can you even imagine what it would be like if you were just okay with whatever was happening? And then you could do 2 hours. And then if you could do two, you could do three. If you could do three, you could do four. If you could do four, you could be enlightened. You know, that's how it works. And so we have to stop trying to be so irritated, or we can't get there. But we don't beat ourselves up. We just recognize, you have to know what the dirt is before you can figure out how to clean it. Yeah. But it's not wasting when you're talking to, you know. It's just the way you look at her face. I'm the only one who sees her face. So let's read this cookie thief. That'll be fun. This is a little story about that was, who sent me this? I think it was Dave Maclis. It's just I thought it would be a fun interjection and where we're going. Because it makes us look at where our minds are. So have you ever heard of it yet? Good. I don't think you guys have heard of it. And I realize it printed only partial parts of some of the letters, so I have to make it work like reading a license plate. A woman was waiting at the airport one night with several long hours before her flight. She hunted for a book in the airport shops, bought a bag of cookies, and found a place to drop. She was engrossed in her book, but happened to see that the man sitting beside her, as bold as could be. That doesn't make sense. The man is sitting beside her as... Okay. She grabbed a cookie. Oh, he was being bold sitting beside her. So he grabbed a cookie or two from the bag in between, which she tried to ignore to avoid a scene. So she munched the cookies and watched the clock, and as the gutsy cookie thief diminished her stock, she was getting more irritated as the minutes clicked by, thinking, if I wasn't so nice, I would blacken his eye. With each cookie she took, he took one too, and when only one was left, she wondered what he would do. With a smile on his face and a nervous laugh, he took the last cookie and broke it in half. He offered her half. As he ate the other, she snatched it from him and thought, oh, brother, this guy has some nerve, and he's also rude. Why didn't he even show any gratitude? So she's really getting irritated. She had never known when she had been so galled. You know how some things just get us more than others. Like, she is really pissed off and sighed with relief when her flight was called. She gathered her belongings and headed to the gate, refusing to look back at the thieving ingrate. She boarded the plane, sank in her seat, and she sought her book, which was almost complete. And she reached into her bag, and she grasped with surprise. There was her bag of cookies. "If mine are here," she moaned in despair. "The others were his, and he tried to share." So she was eating his cookies. Too late to apologize, she realized with grief that she was the rude one, the ingrate, and the thief. So he was actually smiling at her because he was sharing his cookies the whole time. And when he got to the last one, he gave her half. And he didn't get involved with why she was mad. That's the part that gets me the most, I think. He just let her be in whatever mood she was in and just kept giving her cookies, thinking, maybe the cookie will make her happy. But she kept getting more mad every time he, you know. Isn't that amazing? So we just don't know how these things are affecting everybody around us and what we get irritated at. And we don't know when we're driving down the road if the person in front of us who just cut us off got news that his wife was having a baby. And he's like, oh, my God, hospital, you know, and he's just driving. And maybe he just cut in front of you. But we have no idea what's going on in any car, in any person, in any mind, in any house, and in our own mind half the time. She doesn't want to wait. Well, that makes sense if she's irritated by, you know, that's just, you keep busting your mom. So let's see. We're going to move into the analytical meditation part. And I have some examples of, it's not quite in the module, but I brought something fun to do. So since we haven't, this is interesting when it says discuss, because nobody can discuss how we've done it before, but transforming habitually harmful, I think that's why this all fits in, habitually harmful or unproductive patterns. And that's the hardest part, is to think that our irritation is our unproductive mind. That's not helping us. It's just never going to help us, because the more we get irritated, the better we get at it, until we've nailed it when we're older. And we don't want to be that grumpy older person. And some of us are closer than others, so we really don't want to be that grumpy older person. And then I have something to read to you. Did I read about cortisol to you yet? Because I can read it again even if I did. But do you remember that? It's very tiny. So does anybody know what cortisol is? Do you know what cortisol is? Joy knows. Good. Right. The stress hormone. So have you heard of it, John? Have you heard of it? Oh, good. So this is something, I think this is really critical to our society and healthcare. And we could solve most of our problems if we could get this. And the way to get this is through meditation, so that's the point. So I want to read to you what it actually does. And it arises like it's, I have zero health ability to talk about it, but secreted, that's the word I'm looking for. So it's in us, but it's secreted when we get very stressed. So you know what an adrenaline rush feels like, guys? Okay? And it's kind of exciting because you get work done, but do you know what the other side of an adrenaline rush is? So if you had something scare the crap out of you in the house, and then when it's over and you realize it was nothing, do you know how it feels in your body, like your heart's racing? And if you've really had a big scare, or if you've really worked hard for like 20 minutes or 10 minutes at something, when it's over, it's actually quite exhausting. It depletes your system, and it's secreted this cortisol. So the adrenaline rises, and then cortisol comes out. So it's an important hormone in the body, secreted by the adrenal glands and involved in the following functions. It helps maintain proper glucose metabolism, regulation of blood pressure, insulin release for blood sugar maintenance. That's really a big one. Immune function, huge, and inflammatory response. So normally it's present in the body at higher levels in the morning and lowest at night. Although stress isn't the only reason that cortisol is secreted into the bloodstream, it has been termed the stress hormone because it's also secreted in higher levels during the body's fight or flight. So when we get scared or when we just get overwhelmed with things, it's a response to stress. And it's responsible for several stress-related changes in the body. So what it can do in a positive way is give you that quick burst of energy for survival. I mean, it really is to help you with survival. Heightened memory functions, so you can remember things, you have a real acuity in the brain. A burst of increased immunity, lower sensitivity to pain, and helps maintain homeostasis, so like an equilibrium in the body. But that's a little tiny release. So while cortisol is important and helpful to the stress, it's also important for the relaxation response to be activated. So unfortunately, in our current high-stress culture, it's released, so it's activated so often that the body doesn't always have a chance to return to normal, resulting in a state of chronic stress. So acute is one isolated circumstance, and chronic is overall. So this is what it does when it's in its negative, when it's too released too often. Impaired cognitive performances, so that's the brain function, actually decreases your ability to think cognitively. It suppresses your thyroid function, which changes everything to do with the health and your body and your weight and all that. It imbalances the blood sugar, so it can create hyperglycemia. Decreases your bone density. Okay? So osteoporosis in adults, just the release of cortisol can lead to osteoporosis. Do people talk about that? No. It decreases muscle tissue. So it's depleting the body. It creates higher blood pressure. We can imagine that. I think that's not too... it's not too hard to imagine. It lowers your immunity. Now, to me, this is the biggest one. So it creates inflammatory responses. It slows your wound healing. And it creates many health consequences. And then one that that surprises and kind of depresses a lot of people is it increases the abdominal fat right here. So cortisol rises in the body and increases this layer, which is associated with a greater amount of health problems than the fat deposited in other areas of the body. And so then some of the health problems associated with that are heart attacks and strokes, the development of metabolic syndrome. I don't know what that one is. I guess the way you metabolize things. Higher levels of bad cholesterol and lower levels of good cholesterol. Just cortisol. Is anybody shocked by that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a little bit, not of stress, but a little bit of, I need to get this job done to get this paper finished or something is necessary. But if you constantly had deadlines, and then going home and you fight, and then you go to bed and you have bad dreams, you're never getting out of the zone of stress. And so, anybody want to meditate some more? So that's why meditation, I mean, that's really why it's vital. I've had doctors actually write a prescription for them to come see me to teach meditation because it's doctors are finally realizing it. And then when he went back, his blood pressure was so much lower. It's just really amazing and it's beautiful. And we're not doing anything. We're not paying any money. We're just sitting. It's all right here. That's why it's the science we talk about. So I like to throw that in there because I think that it's really helpful. Cortisol. CORTISOL, cortisol. Okay, so now we're going back to problems, and we're trying to figure out. We have to know where the problems arise from in suffering, so that we know how to not suffer. You have to be able to look at it. And one of the meditations we use for that is the friend, enemy, stranger meditation, equanimity. So we're going to do that one. So aversion and attachment, as we talked about with irritation, are rooted in self-centeredness and self-cherishing. And when we simply don't like something, that's because we're self-cherishing so much that we want it to go our way. So that's my pet peeve thing. When I let go of not having to have it my way, then I feel happier. I'm the one who benefits. Everybody else is benefiting too. I can promise you. Yeah. And then if you want to, put a cushion under your feet so that because like Jackie, she might enjoy one too. Oh, okay. Is that good? All right, so begin to settle into your position. Focus your attention on your breath again. Use any method you like to stabilize your mind and settle it down into the moment and into a more concentrated state. Counting on the inhalations, breathing naturally, finding some sensation to put your mind onto. So generate the strong intention that this meditation will help overcome self-centered bias and judgments and develop the mind of perfect equanimity and balance towards others. Now we're going to imagine a scenario. So you conjure up three people in front of you. Someone you like. Just think of someone that you have a very great fondness towards. Someone you dislike. And someone you feel indifferent towards. While the last category sometimes provides difficulty for people, you might just simply imagine someone who opened a door for you or a clerk. Someone you can kind of think of, but you have no knowledge of anything about them. So you don't know if they would be your best friend or your enemy. So put these three people in front of you. And now first focus on the friend. You can imagine them on your left. Allow your feelings for that person to arise nice and strong. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely and truly a friend. This person is good to you, fulfills your needs and your wishes. And feel how happy you wish this person to be. And then identify yourself with these good feelings. Just let it bathe over you. What it's like to hang out with this friend, to think about this friend, and hold them in your heart. And now shift your attention to your enemy or the person you dislike, or maybe just a person who's not kind to you, who does not satisfy your needs, who annoys you, makes you angry, maybe who hurts you, who has bullied you. And regard this person carefully. Just simply immerse yourself in the feelings that you have about this person and place them on your right. And now shift your attention to the so-called stranger. Someone you feel indifferent towards. You don't really know them. You have no like or dislike. And then immerse yourself in this sense of indifference, this sense of no judgment. And place them right in front of you. Now consider and recognize that the nature of your relationships with each of these three people and the labels that you've put on them are based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think of people who have been your friend, but now maybe you don't like them. And think of people that you didn't like at one point, but then you became friends. And then think of strangers who became friends. And then strangers who've become enemies. Because every friend had to start out as a stranger, as well as every enemy. Each of these labels is temporary and impermanent. It is just what the situation is at this moment in time. Now move your attention back to your friend and imagine a situation that might cause your friendship to end. Imagine your friend saying things that would hurt you and you turn and they turn against you. Experience the resentment and the anger and the hurt that you would feel in such a situation. Do you still feel warmly? Do you still feel friendly towards this person? Do you still wish him well? Do you still want to be with this person? Do you still wish them to be happy? And so now you ask yourself, where is this friend now? Remember that this person was not your friend before you were acquainted. and recognize how easily this person could cease to be your friend, just as you've imagined. And think to yourself, there's no sound reason for feeling kind and loving toward only the friend of this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can become tomorrow's enemy. And now move your attention to the present enemy or difficult person and imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together and become closer. Maybe a common interest, a word, a praise of kindness, or a look, a smile. And your feelings can change. Are they softening? Are they becoming warmer? Did you find out something about them and maybe why they were so angry? And now you feel different. Can you learn to feel warmly towards your enemies? It's happened before, and it could happen again. So why do we hold so strongly to the concept that this person is an enemy? Now move your attention to the stranger. Imagine how one act of kindness or anger from this person could immediately turn him into a friend or an enemy. A joke or something said in line, a smile, a sweetness. There is no inherent, definite stranger there. There is no sound reason for the feelings of indifference that we hold on to. Because remember that your present friend and your present enemy were both strangers. Now this enemy could become a friend or an enemy or a friend or an enemy. Maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you and think about the fragile impermanence of these relationships. It is only your misconceived belief in the concreteness of these labels of friend, enemy, and stranger that holds your mind back from the possibility of change and fluidity. Your friend, enemy, and stranger all want happiness just as much as you do. And in this respect, we are all equal. Also, everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve the ultimate clarity and compassion. The differences that we see in people are superficial, based only on our own mistaken and narrow self-centered views. Because in fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and compassion. None of this means that we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is necessary. Naturally, we feel closer to some people, and we are wise to keep our distance from others. And this is not contradictory to the meditation. The point of the meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being, whether they help or harm us at this point in time, and to see that the labels that we put on others are arbitrary, mistaken, and changeable. So dedicate your positive energy and insights of this meditation and your willingness to look at all people as equal to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. We used to, in DB, when we do that, we would sometimes get up and afterwards and say, oh, you were my friend in the friend part. Luckily, nobody ever came up and said you were my enemy. But did anybody have any insights or anything that, was it kind of surprising to see how easily that people move from one place to another? No, it wasn't surprising to you. When you're 16, I think you see it in middle school, especially you see it just flying through every day. It goes from... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think most of us might be drawing on those experiences to remind ourselves that. Everybody still remembers eighth grade, how difficult high school was. You know, when that's a time when things are very fluid. So how was that for you, Layla? Is that good? Yeah. Mm-hmm. For adults, Well, you do see your friends, you know, generally speaking, every day, and we don't see our friends every day, so it's easier for that. That would be my assessment. It's easy, the question was, why do adults tend to have relationships that can just fade away, or bitterness ensue? And that's just a product of mind. There's nothing else going on, but they decide that they don't like that person anymore. And then because it's harder to get together with our friends, that space just gets created, wouldn't you say? You know, and then we don't see them. Mm-hmm. And we move cities and we move on. And so when you go to reunion, it's really quite shocking to see people that you just adored. And you're just like, you don't even remember their name, or you have, it just doesn't have any bearing anymore. That's nothing other than recognizing impermanence. And that it moves through, and it shows us clearly how we could just feel so strongly for this person, and then nothing. So it can be surprising, but it's just sort of the nature of, some people keep up with everybody, and some people don't keep up with anybody. So, all right. And something I wanted to read out of, this is another book. All the books are over here. Just to show briefly for the new people, some of the books we've been using, this one is great, How to Meditate. It's just like Jim's Bible he uses for all the different meditation. It includes everything on how to meditate. Well, that's what it's called. So it takes you through step by step. And then Buddha's Brain is really good for people who love the science of the mind. It's a good book. This is the one I used a lot, The Joy of Living. After I taught a module in another location, somebody said I should just tell everybody this is a required reading. So he just breaks apart the brain in a really funny way, and he suffers from a lot of anxiety. So it's helpful to see a monk and how he works with it. And this guy came to teach here. He was amazing, Karuna Caton. So it's called Misleading Mind. And it's a really good book on the simplicity of how to work with your mind. So those are some of the books you can look at. They're all, most of them are available out here in the bookstore. This is a book, Thupten Chodron actually came to speak here, Venerable Chodron. This first nun you saw, right? Oh, it was your first. Okay, I keep thinking that you were here longer. So it's signed by her. So she wrote this great book. These are the guided meditations on the stages of the path. So this is, in Buddhism, we study the path as in the way that you work with your mind. And then you might pull out karma and study that, but where it fits into the path. And death and rebirth, or all the different things that we study, these are meditations on that, on the Lam Rim. But there was something I wanted to read on guided meditations on alternatives. So this is especially people who've practiced more. In the context of meditating on the gradual path, which is, I'm pointing back here because those sutras represent the whole path. But we don't read those. We have it in digestible bites for us. Mindfulness of breathing is done as a preliminary meditation, mainly for the purpose of calming the mind and subduing distracting thoughts. And the majority of the session involves analytical or checking meditation on a topic. So as noted above, in other contexts, the entire meditation session may be used on just breathing. In addition, there are meditation objects other than the breath that may be used for calming the mind. So while breath works for some people, they may find that they like to focus on something different. In the Tibetan tradition, it's a visualized image of the Buddha we use. So we meditate on how to visualize that. So we don't try to see the Buddha with our eyes. And then you can use anything. So I brought some ideas. We're not going to do it, but I just wanted to show you. Like, you could print out pictures. And you could just use a flower. And you could literally just study it and then try to recreate it in your mind simply to focus. for, you know, for really no other reason than to train your mind. I'm not going to think about the problems. I'm not going to think about my school or my daughter or my husband or my irritations or anything or just food or hunger. I'm just going to try to recreate this in my mind. So it'd be just simply be a focus meditation. So you're not analyzing it. You're just using it as a point of focus. But I thought we might try. We don't have as much time as I'd like. But this one was so successful in the other class, I thought we'd do it. But that's what she's talking about, is how to recreate an image in your mind. And so this one is meditation on a saying. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's kind of weird. So if you're someone, I've noticed other people in classes, if a long verse makes you crazy, like you can't even focus on it, then a short verse might be better. You know, like, I'd prefer you don't read them, but if you see a big one, that's going to be a thick verse. I want you to try to pick one out. Get a skinny one if you can't focus on a big verse and it's going to make your mind go crazy. So just grab one. You can take a long one. Good for you. There's one funny one in there, too. Did I show you what the front looked like? I don't know if you've seen this before, Jim. Have you seen this one? Once you get through some of the other one, you might enjoy that. Who got the funny one? Okay. We'll talk about it. You probably got it, didn't you? Okay. We'll talk about it when we're done. So, this is a way to do an analytical meditation. You can open your eyes and look at it, you know, while we're meditating, because you might need to look at it again and again. But you're just simply going to do nothing other. This is just training the mind. Then try to grab whatever you want to out of this. You can take it word by word. You can take the nuances. You can take the essence. You can think about what it might mean to you, or maybe what it was like when you're younger. Now, any way you want to do it is fine, but you're analyzing it. And in this way, you'll see that your mind won't drift as much as it does when maybe you're just focused on the breath or you're trying to do a visualization. I'm talking and your mind wanders. You probably won't get as sleepy because you're completely focused. So I want you to see, I want you to have some success in different ways. And this is one that many people have enjoyed. So I'm not even going to do anything. You're going to get yourself into it by breathing. Then just do your thing with it. Analyze it. And when I ring the bell, we'll talk about it. So they'll do this to begin. Which word? Oh, hostility, anger. Great anger. To not have it. To help not have it. Good. I had to make that a little short since we're coming to the end. So overall, how'd that feel to really look at something? Did you like that? Jim liked that. Yeah, Joy, you like that? Everybody seemed to really like that. John, is that good? So which one did you have?
I love your neighbor.
Oh, okay, not that one. He is very deep. Who had the Monty Python one? Joy had it. Always look on the bright side of life. That's what I want playing, just so you know, at my funeral on repeat. Always look on the bright. You know that. So, I wish we had more time. It's really fun to tell me what you think about it. If you could briefly do that, we can try to whip through it. So, what was yours? Oh, she got a good one for her, didn't she? So accepting your small irritations is the very teacher that you need to make you happier. That's beautiful. I told you what it should be. I'm sorry. That's just one way. What did it mean to you?
I kind of did not accept greater harm. I was thinking, like, how it should be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you sit with it, it's going to be, oh, if you keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you keep a small harm, mm-hmm. Accept it. Mm-hmm. Oh, if you accept it, you're not solving it. Okay. But you can't solve all harms, can you? Okay, that's fine. That's good. You had a good analysis there. Yeah. Okay. You can't even think about greater harms. But the idea behind it would be that if little things like changing the toilet paper makes you okay, then you can accept the next little thing. And then, yeah. Yeah. It's harder. Mhm. Yeah. It's too big. Yeah. Yeah, that's difficult stuff. Let's see what John had. Love your neighbor as your. So how'd that work for you? Yeah. It's a very overused one, but that's why I picked it, so that somebody could say, well, if you pick it apart while you're meditating. To see if you have any more insights.
Yeah, I kind of had a different look at it. I mean, I was kind of like, I would place myself in the other person's perspective, like kind of like actually place my body.
Oh.
Into their point. So
good for you.
I don't know, talking to myself. I don't know, it's kind of weird.
Good. That's really powerful. Because then you can see where they're coming from, right?
Yeah.
Instead of you looking at them, you were being them.
I was
that was really good. Mm-hmm. That's what she's teasing you. Well, there's this book I told them in the beginning that's called The Human Factor. It was just a sci-fi book, but you could go into this geodesic thing and you could pick somebody, somehow you could pick something and totally be in their mind. And then the wife was like, oh my God, I see what he meant then. He wasn't trying to be mean. He meant this, like if you could really do that, yeah, good. Well, because when you're talking about it out here, it's different than in meditation. That's why I wanted you to try it, because meditation takes you in a different place than you would go when you're alert and thinking. Mm-hmm. Yes. It seems to get into heart level. Yeah. What you get? Hostility. She got a deep one. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. So if you could, so what is it? That's a tough one for you with language. So
yes,
could you get some insight?
I got it.
Okay.
I got it. Yeah, I like it.
What did you think about?
I think it's good. It reminded me of my sister-in-law, just because my brother, he talks a lot, which is his wife, talks a lot about her, like she's not good. And
negative. If you could see her sorrow, if you could, mm-hmm, then you would really see. That's kind of what John came to, too.
Right.
How about you in the back? What was yours? She got a good, juicy emptiness one. Mm-hmm. 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 Good. Could you keep your mind focused?
Yes, I knew it.
Still trying to travel a little bit. Was it easier for you guys to keep your mind focused on this because you were good? Okay. Joy, what was yours? It's so simple, but did it have any profound... Oh, that's great. That gave me goosebumps. He does, doesn't he? Good. Good. So it made you feel good? Yeah. Good. Jim?
You are like space.
Ah, I love this one. The lovely Venerable Renee. Get there first.
So that's the last part of that confusion doesn't make it worse. I was confused at first.
And the confusion didn't make it worse. Yeah. It's just there. And then your enemy is the same way. Your enemy has universal goodness, and his confusion doesn't make it worse, and his intellect doesn't make it better. And your friend has that. So it makes it kind of equalizes things when you realize everybody has it. It's hard to do that to someone who's bugging the crap out of you, but where we're allowing ourselves to be bugged by. Okay, Jackie. Yeah, I should have made shorter ones. Do you remember the picture that we had? You go ahead and tell me what it was.
Well, first off, you know, I found myself, you know, questioning the use of the word anger because that anger is usually got something underneath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm trying to differentiate unruly beings are unlimited in space. They're not your enemy. Unruly beings are beings that you can't manage.
Exactly. Call that whole first line irritations. Now say it. Irritations are as limitless
as space. They cannot possibly
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then call irritations a rocky path, rocks on the ground. You can't possibly put enough leather down on the earth, remember that, to be able to walk on the rocks so that you won't get hurt. But if you put a pair of shoes on, you can then safely walk on the ground. So if you, the shoe equals, in an SAT test, the rocks equal irritation, unruly beings, and the shoes equal not having a moment of anger. So you not having a moment of anger, you don't have to change everybody else. You just change not having anger, and then you're fine. Like, oh. It's not that everybody needs to stop irritating Jill. Jill needs to stop being irritated. If I could only. Yeah. That's what they say. Geshe says it all the time. There goes the meditation. But I mean, we have our limits, and then we're we only can do what we can do. Well, then you had that's your moment. Yeah. You don't have to, yeah. Well, that's yeah. But see, we can't control that. So you know, but you do what you can do, and then you have to say that's the point. The way I call that is, until I can't practice anymore. So I'll practice until I can't, you know, and then I can't, and then I know, well, there's my line. Mm-hmm.
And then you come up and you say, you have to learn to deal with it. I said, I'm 42. You're teaching me I have to learn? You're teaching that she should learn to respect me.
She was just, yeah, we don't know what was really going on in her mind, but.
I went above and beyond and they called me back. And actually, the whole floor was, I was in a call for the right here with young people. And I don't know what happened after I went, the whole situation just changed. Everybody calmed down. There's no one to say she said it was down. And I guess.
Yeah, and you stood up for it. Okay, well that's a lot of stuff. Well, we have to stop right here. I'm sorry, because the class is over. So we can talk outside, but we have to close for the. It's It's difficult. You know, in the way that we work with it, we can we bring things to the light without anger? You know, but then anger is going to be there, and it's not that we beat ourselves up when we have that. But you can take it back to the cushion and think, now how would I do it? Would I do it differently? What would I do? And then we relearn from every experience we have on how to deal.
I always get to go back because I was like, everybody knows.
Yeah. Yeah, I just tried. I wanted to close with Oh, you guys can take those too if you want. I don't need them back. If they're fun to you, if it's something you want to chew on. This is something that my daughter wrote. Did I have the age on here? She did it here, I'm pretty sure, because I don't think this would have come from school. So we started here when she was 8. She's 13 now. So it's called The Rules of Happy Land. And I just think I read it in all my classes. Number one, nobody in Happy Land is allowed to hurt another person in Happy Land or to be mean to another person. Number two, nobody is allowed to spread rumors about other people that are not true. Three, use only kind words. Four, don't do something to somebody if they do not say okay. Five, no killing animals unless you are very hungry. That includes bugs. Six, no stealing or taking things that are not yours. Don't yell if somebody has a headache. This is what she had. She had a lot of headaches. Number eight, no teasing. That's my big rule, no teasing. Nine, be respectful. 10, do not show off. 11, everybody has to smile at least once a day. That's a testament to, and then she said, the top 11 or 10 rules of Happy Land. Visit Happy Land today. So that's a lot of teachings at the center. They have we just have an amazing children's program, and I think that kind of shows. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here. So, there's one quote in here I thought was really helpful. This long part that Venerable Chodron talks about getting to the meditation cushions, because that's the whole idea of this, is to get your butt down, sit down, and do the work. And she just said, just as nourishing our body every day is important and we take time to eat, nourishing ourselves spiritually is also essential. Meditation is time to become friends with ourselves. It is not selfish to each day make a time to be quiet, be in the present moment, and nourish our good qualities. By cultivating our own good qualities and letting ourselves be content, we are able to give more to others during the rest of the day. So I've encouraged everybody throughout the class to find that spot in your house that you're going to sit at, and you're going to take the time to sit and meditate. And so even if it's, some people think that you need to spend 30 or 40 minutes or it's not effective, like I shouldn't do it if I only have five. Some of the richest little mini meditations I've had have been 5 minutes of just saying, nope, I'm just going to sit for a minute, and like some lovely insight will come. So just 5 minutes of checking in, and then if you feel up to it, checking in again in the evening. And I read, she says, not before you go to bed, which is what I do, but maybe in the middle of the evening portion of the day, before you're too sleepy, to review the day and see how you've done things, and maybe you'd like to do it a little different next time, but to go through that, and then it helps you sleep better, more peacefully, if you kind of unload. Mm-hmm. Well, in this meditation, in this tradition, we aren't trying to actually think about nothing. This is definitely a different approach to meditation, in a way where you're trying to decide what my focus is going to be. So we pick a focus, and it could just be the breathing. But at the end of the day, it might be the time where you go through, your meditation would be going through your day. And you might be saying, how did I handle everything? And if you did a great job at some things, then rejoice. And if you didn't, don't beat yourself up. You just say, I'd like to try that differently. So you're reviewing the day and you're thinking, I've had someone call me and say, okay, so I just did my review and I don't even know what she said. I had no idea, but she didn't like it. She said, I'm sorry. And I was like, for what? But she wanted to close her day with having the slate be clear. It was quite beautiful. Oops. Yeah, and saying that sooner. And if you do it that day, or, you know, better yet, in the moment. But if you review and you don't like it, then to say, you know, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean that to sound like that. Then you go to bed with this very peaceful mind, and it doesn't build up, as Geshe-la says. You know, it doesn't kind of stay in your system and cook. You let it out every night, and it makes you feel so much happier. Well, that's the end. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to add? Anybody have anything? Because you guys are new, so you don't have a lot to comment on. But thank you. I really appreciated it. And here's my card if anybody wants to have any yoga or meditation or organizing. Like, you can come to my studio and we can.